asuras and so forth. First homage to the Buddha Gautama, who out of his compassion taught the holy Dharma in order to rid us of distorted views. So, Gautama Buddha. So, the prayer that His Holiness just recited says that, listen to this teaching, which cures all the diseases of afflictive emotions. And so, the Buddha shows a path which is to overcome all kinds of negative emotions from within our mind stream. In the non-Buddhist traditions, they do talk about the afflictive emotions, and particularly the afflictive emotions of the desire realm, and they do their practice based on the understandings of these. And in the case of Jains, the Jain practitioners, they practice nonviolence and peace. And it's amazing how they practice so seriously. And then they also pluck their hair, which is also kind of one of their practice, but I don't know what the bold Jains who are bold, would do, because they don't have hair. However, all the other, these other traditions believe in a soul theory, whether you call it Atma or soul. There is this view of a self, which is the idea that there is a master of the psychophysical aggregates, which are like servants to the master, the self. Or and so with regard to how the afflictive emotions arise within the desire realm at the gross levels, but they do explain, but when it comes to explaining the subtle arisal of negative emotions, then it's difficult for them. But the main impetus of the teaching, the main profundity of the teaching of the Buddha is revealed in the path pertaining to the path which is shared with the beings of intermediate scope. So in the case of Christianity, for example, they do also have a teaching which values this human life because it was created by God. And then they also teach about the sufferings of like hell and so forth. And so as Uddhava Tantra, Mahayana Uddhava Tantra says, the teaching which is founded on the Four Noble Truths is unique to the teaching of the Buddha. Teaching based on the Four Noble Truths is only found in the teaching of the Buddha. And when the Buddha is proved to be an authoritative, reliable person, it is said that because the Buddha is able to teach the main practice of how to avoid negative actions and to also how to overcome the afflictive emotions which obstruct the attainment of liberation, and teach that of selflessness, in realizing which the wisdom counters the afflictive emotions at the root. And not only in explanation, but proved through reasoning and logic, but also that this destructive emotions that we have, which has remained fearless until now, to and together with its the self-cherishing attitude, they together have actually remained in us for so long. And this, the factor which outdo them or do away with these is the selflessness, understanding of the selflessness, and therefore how to regarding the process of attaining the liberation, definite goodness through the understanding of selflessness based on reason, and not only remains in the text something to be like a spectacle to look at, but actually if you apply the insight, you can see that that it works to overcome. And so in the great treatise of Lam Rim, Je Rinpoche says, therefore the Four Noble Truths are important and essential in all the teachings to be introduced in the Hinayana or Mahayana teachings. And therefore, entering and exiting samsara is explicit and very clearly explained. And so the disciples should be led through this teaching in this way, on the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. And therefore, the teaching of the Buddhism, I first introduced, and then you should lead disciples to overcome the preoccupation with this life and preoccupation with future life. And the introduction should be done on the basis of the Four Noble Truths. Otherwise, talking about the four Buddha bodies and the Buddhas having all those excellent signs and marks of great personality. And so the profundity and the specialty or special quality of the Buddha's teaching would be revealed through this teaching that we are going to go through today. And when you understand the teaching on the basis of the understanding these four truths and so forth, then it gives an enthusiasm, special enthusiasm, to follow the path. Otherwise, when you talk about suffering in the lower realms and so forth, it's almost like scaring people away. So once a person came to see me and told me that he was feeling unwell, and I asked why, and he said he had this soglung problem, some imbalance in the energy problem. And I asked him, why did that happen? And he said, because of the meditation on impermanence. So this body and the mind that we have now, subject to suffering, that the three types of suffering. Of course, when you focus your mind on these sufferings that I explained, it could give you this kind of imbalance in energy, lung energy. But when you think about liberation and how you can attain it, how it's possible for us to overcome our negative emotions and reach that goal, I mean, it gives a special impetus and in gathering the enthusiasm to pursue the path and that goal. And so we are going to go through the... Oh, we are left with a slight bit at the end of this... In particular, so after thinking about these things, the way to modify your behavior. This is in two parts, the general teaching, in particular, how to purify oneself. General teaching, During your meditations, you should meditate the thing over the discussions on virtue and sin. In between sessions, you should vigilantly and scrupulously modify your behavior. Geshe Benguin Gil used to count up his virtuous actions and his sins at the end of each day with white and black pebbles. He then modified his behavior accordingly. You must do the same from engaging in the deeds of bodhisattvas. It says, how right for me to think diligently all the time, both day and night, from non-virtue comes suffering. How then to be free of non-virtue? The sage said that belief in this is the root of all things virtuous. The root of this belief has always been meditation on ripening effects of karma. In other words, when you come to know the white and black sides of cause and effect, you'll always cultivate vigilance and scrupulousness. When you are in danger of taking a life or lying or whatever, you will immediately draw the line. If you purify yourself, even the subtle sins you have done, expiate yourself of them and refrain from doing them again. Then, as we find in Nagarjuna's letter, whoever was once reckless may later become... His Holiness is asking to move the fan further from him. Whoever was once reckless may later become scrupulous. They are then as comely and cloudless as a cloudless moon. So there's suffering if there is the fan. If I don't have the fan, then I also have to suffer. So there's both. In both cases, there is suffering. Just like Nanda, Angulimala, Ajatashatru, and Udayan. I've always discussed this verse in the preparatory right sections. Day 6, Nanda was dominated by lust. Angulimala killed 999 men. Ajatashatru killed his father, who was a non-returner, and Udayana killed his own mother. Yet they purified these sins. Your previously accumulated sins will also be purified. So it is vital to combine expiation of these sins with refraining from repeating them. To sum up, in this small scope section, you should place high value on the law of causality by putting them main points into practice. Even great Atisha put special emphasis on this. Once in Pempo, there was a man who used to recite the seal of Pankong and a man who had pawned a copy of the 100,000 verse Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Immediately after their deaths, Yama's minions led them under the ground and brought them into his presence. The second man lied, but to no avail. He was shown Yama's mirror. The mirror revealed who had sold the sutra, who had bought it, the lentils the man had bought for the proceeds, with the proceeds, and even the child who picked up the lentils when they were spilled. The man was thrown into a giant gold cauldron. The man who used to recite the seal of Pankong took refuge and so returned from the dead. Geshe Potapa told him, tell your story to others. You might think, in my next birth, the sins I have accumulated will not harm me because my abbot, ordination master, and so forth don't know about them. But the king of single-pointed concentration, Sutra, says, the stars, the moon, and all may fall, that earth, its mountains, its cities may perish, space itself may be transformed into something else. But you, Buddha, will not speak words untrue. In other words, Buddha's discussion of the law of causality is the truth and will not never deceive. Not even the smallest virtue or sin will disappear of its own accord. You should therefore modify your behavior properly. Even so, because of your excessive familiarity with every small sin, since beginner's time, you have been tarnished by them and should therefore expiate and refrain from these sins by using the four opponent powers, in particular how to purify oneself with the four powers. Although I have already covered this in the above section on the preparatory rites, it is also so important that I shall briefly go over such familiar headings again. The first is the power of repudiation. This means having strong regret for one's sins of the past. This is the most important of the four powers, for if one has it, the others will follow of their own accord. This power is the result of having faith in cause and effect. The power of applying an old antidote, as I have already told you, has six types, all of which were mentioned in Shantideva's Compendium of Instructions, or Compendium of Practice. All the same, any virtuous practice done to purify the sin becomes an example of this power. The power of refraining from the misdeeds involves firmly resolving to refrain from it and thinking, even at the cost of my life, from now on I will not do it again. It will be difficult at first to be able to abandon all your misdeeds for good, but there will be some things that you can abandon from the root. For the things that you cannot abandon in this way, you should cultivate a resolve to refrain from doing them. Think, I will not do them today, and repeat this every day. The power of the basis is taking refuge in developing bodhicitta. This is the point of having these two prayers at the beginning of meditations on Vajrasattva and recitation of his mantra or the confession of transgressions and so on. We have accumulated every sort of sin since beginningless time. Our collection of sins is like the treasure hoard of a king. Even so, as I have already mentioned in the preparatory rite section, if we vigorously expiate them by means of the four powers and refrain from repeating them, we will be able to purify even karma, whose consequences we will otherwise be certain to undergo. It is best to do this using Akashagarbha Garbha's confession, the confession of transmigrations, combined with full prostrations or Suvarnabhasutamas Confession Sutra, as discussed in the volume Miscellaneous Works of Tsongkhapa's Collected Works, and the like. They say that the process of purification is particularly effective if at the conclusion of expiation, one feels each and every sin has been purified, and if one visualizes as hard as one can unfocused emptiness. And non-objectified emptiness. It is not helpful to be either indifferent to one's sin or to remain afraid of them. It is vital that we beginners expiate them, and then we do so vigorously for a long time until the signs that we have purified ourselves mentioned in the spell of Kandakari appear repeatedly. As I said, ordinary monks will purify sins by attending public ceremonies or debating practice, by pursuing their studies and contemplation, and even by participating in a series of debating tournaments between the various houses of their college, if such things are done with the aim of accumulating merit and self-purification. And this section on the small beings of small scope is in Phabonga Rinpoche, which is finished. Next is we are moving to Shamar Lamrim. So, with regard to training your mind on the path which is shared with the beings of intermediate scope, there are two parts to it. First is developing the mind or the thought to pursue the pursue liberation. And then the second is establishing the nature of the path leading to liberation. And with regard to the first, it says during the preparatory practice, by thinking about the faults of true suffering, as the Buddha says, you should know suffering. Benchen Lobsang Chögyen says that regarding the suffering of suffering, even the animals have, by fearing this kind of experience, they have this wish to be free from this kind of suffering. And with regard to contaminated joyful or blissful and pleasant experiences, even the non-Buddhist practitioners have the desire to overcome and go beyond this. As I said before, the Jain practitioners and so forth, and the other non-Buddhists have great practice. When I have been to Mahakumbh Mela's festivals 2 or 3 times, and I was going to go to the third one, but because of bad weather, I was unable to go. And because it's important to have harmony amongst all religious traditions, which is one of my reasons to go to the Kumbh Melas. And we can see many hermits living in solitude, the non-Buddhist hermits. And it's not the case that they come during Kumbh Mela, come naked. It's not only that they come, they become naked, or they during the Mela, but it seems that there are those practitioners. Some of them maybe, but many of their these practitioners, non-Buddhist practitioners, live naked in the Himalayan mountains, and so they do have the practice of the shared practice of the inner heat, the Jandali practice. And so they really work hard and arduously with great effort. So they do have some revulsion to the pleasures of this life to a certain degree, but they are unable to shake the root of the self-grasping. And then with regard to the guru devotion, they do also have quite a strong guru devotion. They refer to their guru. I mean, when they see their gurus, they would respectfully call on by saying Guruji. And then when it comes to Christians also, I have a friend who would shed tears as he mentions the qualities of the God. So even the non-Buddhists have, they do feel renunciation from the contaminated pleasure, whereas, as Panchen Lhasa Chökyen says, we should mainly focus on the conditioned existential pervasive suffering of the entire samsara. And so we should focus mainly on the changeable suffering or suffering of change and the pervasive conditioned existential suffering. This is what the Buddha refers to by saying, when he says suffering should be known. So the text says, establishing with regard to the first, at the preparatory stage, reflecting on the faults of true suffering, you should contemplate the benefits of easily developing interest in pursuing liberation and great compassion. And after meditating the faults for quite a long time, consider this. Certainly, we'll attain a higher rebirth status by striving to avoid negative actions and cultivating the positive actions. However, unless I attain liberation, the freedom from the root of suffering, which whatever riches and excellences there may be in the human and deity's realms of existence, they are not beyond the nature of pervasive conditioning existential suffering. Except that I'm diluted to consider the conditioned suffering as happiness. There is no true happiness in the cycle of existence at all. Besides, whatever excellent things of the samsara I may gain, in the end, they ultimately turn out to be bad. And this is similar to a criminal. Attaching to this samsaric pleasure is similar to a criminal who is bound to be executed in a month, but who, in the meantime, would undergo legal procedures and also beatings daily, but who has stopped suffering the beating. Daily beating due to someone's favor of pleading for him on his behalf. Yet this criminal will not have. Yet because of the imminent execution approaching nearer and nearer to each day, the criminal will not have the slightest joy in his heart. Likewise, what good higher status one may achieve, the propensities of the past positive karmas wear out, and then one falls into the three bad times migrations, where one would experience long and intense suffering. Therefore, reflecting on the suffering of samsara, in order to daily, in order to develop the thought to pursue liberation, has two parts: contemplating the suffering of samsara in general and contemplating the individual sufferings. So, and then the first one, regarding the first one, there are six sections or types of sufferings: suffering of uncertainty. Regarding which there is uncertainty of who is going to be your relative or enemy. They change. Someone may be your relative in this life, but in the next life they may become your enemies, as the text says. And then there's uncertainty of birth in different realms of existence, high and low. They go through higher realms, and then you may be next time born in lower realms, and so there's no certainty. And then there's no certainty in the joys and the misery that you suffer. And distinguishing Karma Sutra says, Moggallana saw a man holding his son in his laps and eating fish while feeding up the bones to the to a black dog sitting before him. And Moggallana says to a wise man who has visited the place, this fish, this householder is eating, was his father, who used to fish from the pond behind their house and eat them. After his death, the father was born in the pond as fish numerous times, and this man, his son, has caught those fish hundreds of times and ate them. And then the dog, the man's mother, was his mother, who, obsessed with desirous attachment, had not given wealth to anyone. So she died an immoral woman, and while feeling attached to her house, and is now born as a dog in the household, and she will be reborn as dogs again and again, she says, Moggallana says. And the child in the man's lap was a man who had an extramarital affair with his wife, the man's wife, who was killed by the man covertly and one night. And that man was attached to the wife and to the man's wife, and conceived in her womb. And then there is also a story of an arhat who says to a man who saw a man leading a cattle in front of the highway, in front of the house of the man, while the cattle was actually moaning and crying. And this Arhat has said that the cattle was a rich man who every year offered animal sacrifice at a shrine that he had built, that he had installed. And then when the man was dying, he actually asked his son to continue the animal sacrifice all the time. And so after death, he was born as a cattle again and again in that family, and that cattle, the Arhat witnessed, was his sixth rebirth in the family cattle. And there are many other stories mentioned in the sutras. And there was a poor householder in Shravasti who was born as a worm in the kind of a sore that was formed on a bull calf. And that, as soon as the worm was born, a crow would come and pick it from the wound of the animal. So that's happened again and again. And then there is the suffering of feeling insatiation. And so the text mentions that we have taken the milk that we have sucked from our mothers, and having been born as children who were breastfed, if they are accumulated, it would be as big as the four the oceans in the four directions. And then and so forth. And so the text goes through other types of suffering. And so because of our feeling discontented with the pleasures of this samsara, we are born again and again in the depths of suffering. And so we are left in samsara, in the depths of samsara. And there is a story related to one of the previous lives of the Buddha, I think. There was a king named the Chakravartin king who ruled the four quarters of the cosmos. And this king, Alenu, at one time happened to be with Indra, the king of the gods. And Indra took him to the 33, the realm of the 33, and he enjoyed the wealth and the resources of the gods together with Indra. But at one time, he had this malicious thought, thinking, what use is sharing the resources with Indra? If I kill him, I would be the only king of the gods. And so as soon as he had that malicious thought, he fell down from the sky and to a palace in the world, an old palace in the world, and he suffered to the point that he almost died. And so even today, we can see many people causing themselves lots of suffering and ruining themselves because of their desire, insatiable desire. their greed. And Kunchok Tembe Dweme had told one story which says that in China, Shota Shin, there was someone named Shota Shin whose power was almost equal to the emperor of King the China. And so because of his greed for the emperor's empire, the resources and so forth, he actually ruined himself and all his dependents. So they were overcome. And so when we also meet with one person, I mean, when we are gathered with one person and look at another group which has 10 persons or so, and we would also see, oh, then of course I could do with this one person and 10 persons. If I have the 10, then it would satisfy me. But when you have the 10, then you would want more and more. So then you will also suffer like Shota Shin, this Chinese. So with regard to the suffering, these types of sufferings, in Lamrim Chemo it gives 8 types of sufferings, with suffering of birth, and then ends with the appropriation of the suffering of 5 psychophysical aggregates. And so we should think about along these lines as given in Lamrim Chemo. So suffering due to rebirth and suffering because of the ensuing unpleasant experiences. And so you would, by thinking along this line, these sufferings, then you will feel, if I could, how good if I could, and how nice it would be if I could go out of this suffering, which comes due to our negative emotions. So this is more powerful meditation. And then the next suffering that it mentions here is having to leave the body of samsara again and again, and then next is having to take rebirth again and again, and then the next suffering is that. There's always you always go through the high and low status, alternating between them again and again, and there's no certainty about them. And then there's the meditation on the faults of those are the faults, and then there's the fault of being alone. So with regards to having to leave this kind of samsaric body again and again, the text says, whoever we are in this the 3,000 world systems, there's none who has not been born into the 3,000 system worlds, and who undergoes birth and death. not even as little as the tip of a needle. So when we were born as lower animals, for example, like snakes or frogs and so forth, and if we are able to collect all the bodies of those animals, it's limitless or without any measure. There's no need to mention that. So it is, of course, known that they are the most difficult to be born as humans. And then, having been born as humans, we die. And if we were to collect all the bones of all our bones as humans and pile them up in one place, it is said that the height of these bones would be as high as the Mount Meru, and the blood that we and the blood in those lives, if we put them together, and it's said to be as huge as the oceans. And so there's no it says that there's no value in feeling haughty about having this kind of human life now. So even if we were born as a deity in the desire realm, we would have to abandon that at the end. And so there's no so the body that we gain or obtain in our lives in samsara are with unreliable. And with regard to the with regards to having to go over the faults of having to conceive over and over again in samsara, the text is, as explained in the two above outlines that have foregone, that there is no beginning to our explain, as I've explained above, that there are many extensive reasonings that were given to show that there is no beginning to the samsara. And so we have we were born as humans in the past life, and also we have conceived as animals and so forth. And so if we have to count how many times we have been born in these different realms of existence as humans or animals and so forth, they are countless and immeasurable. And therefore, there is no beginning whatever in this beginning to our birth in this samsara. And so if we could actually count, beginning with this life and going back to our previous lives, by using by using the grains of or the particles on this earth, So we will never be even close to the beginning of our life in samsara. So, since time beginningless, so recently one of my friend who was a government Tibetan government official in the past, and he had great pain, and so usually people would request me, please give us your blessing so that I would be over with this, I would come out of this pain. But this official asked me, please pray for my death as quickly as possible. And so, since time beginningless, whatever life form of life I have may have been through, I have definitely suffered immeasurable pain, and so sometimes people become sick with AIDS and other diseases, and they are kind of cast aside by society, and they have lots of suffering because of that as well. So I saw one Indian, perhaps. So I saw one beggar who was actually dragging himself on the road. And so if you see him, please make sure that you look after him and may give all gifts to him. So they cannot be lying or pretending. So these they may not be many, but very few of them would have this kind of disability. And so, so as Buddhist practitioners and wearing the robes, it would be good for him also to leave an imprint with as admiring and appreciating the monks and nuns. If you could give him gifts, so I saw this person who was dragging himself in his bottom on the ground and wearing a yellow shirt. So we are at a point where it's mentioned in the text there are people who suffer leprosy, and also people who are lame. So there are I know Baba Amde near Nagpur. He has an ashram, and he was looking after disabled people, or and there were many, about maybe 1,000 people who were suffering leprosy. So Baba Amte is no more, and even when he was alive, he couldn't stand up or sit upright because of some injury to his spine. And so it's not only giving food But we should do whatever we could. I mean, Baba Amdev looked after these leprosy, I mean, who were taught, given different skills, trained with different skills like tailoring and painting and art and so forth. And so some of them didn't have fingers, one or two fingers. They had one or two fingers, but even then they were really working hard. And they had a very special a facial expression as well, showing which displays or indicates their confidence, self-confidence, and pride. Otherwise, those people who are disabled on the side of the roads sometimes live a very poor and pathetic life. And so when I won the Nobel Peace Prize, and so I offered some part of the Nobel Prize money to the Baba Amdev ashram. So when we actually mingle with these people, poor people who are disabled and so forth, I mean, they also feel good. When they have nobody to look after them, and they feel really poor and suffer a lot, feeling lonely. But when they are taken care of, like Baba Amdev did, they really feel happy and enjoy. And in Baba Amdev's tradition, those people whom he took care of, when they died, they are actually buried underground, and then in memory of the person, they plant a tree. And so this I found very good. So there are a few Indian organizations like that, and recently, at a meeting in Dharamsala, there was some people from the Dharavi slum area of Mumbai, and there were some participants from that slum area, and they actually have organized themselves in business. And so they said that their products are selling well in other parts of the world and in India. So otherwise, people who are considered to be low caste and so forth, they also feel demoralized. But if we treat them kindly with a feeling of brotherhood and sisterhood as being same human beings, and then they enjoy. And then in my residence in Dharamsala, there was some renovation work done to protect the house from demolition during earthquake. And so these laborers have come from Chhattisgarh and other places in India. In the beginning, they were not very friendly, but looked very sad and timid. And when I started treating them kindly by shaking hands with them or touching their hands on my head and so forth, and then slowly their expression changed. And so they would now laugh with me and enjoy my company. And so this happens when you really treat others with kindness and a sense of caring with them. And otherwise, when you pretend you are somebody special and look down upon others, it really doesn't help them. And then, especially despising them or criticizing them, are very sad. So I was talking about Baba Amdev earlier. So the people suffering from leprosy, When I visited one of the houses where these leprosy patients were working, so I felt worried when they were hitting their hammers on some other things, on nails or other objects. I felt worried that they would even hit their own hands. But they were really working so proudly and were quite excited when I visited them. And so we can uplift people's mind and emotions. So when we see the poor people laughing and smiling and because of our care and kindness, I mean, it really feels good. So there's numerous kinds of sites that we can. There are numerous things that we can see, such as people getting their hands or fingers chopped off, and so forth. So with regard to the elements of fire, earth, water, and wind, I mean, these are opposing one another. And for example, fire burns things. And so it's like our body is made up of these four elements. When they are in harmony, then we have good health. But once there is disharmony or imbalance in these, then you say we are we have sickness and unhealthy. And it's like in the 400 verses, it is said that these four or five elements in themselves are contradictory to each other. But when they are composed and when they form our body together, and as long as there's no disturbance amongst them, we have health. And so it says that we are like our body is like a container which in which there are four poisonous snakes, and as long as the four poisonous snakes are in harmony and not harming each other but remain rather quiet, there's no harm. But once there's disharmony, and then all kinds of killing and one another, for example, can happen. And so we are in the part which is the second one, reflecting on the different sufferings. So I have a friend who told me that people who are non-believers, when they are about to die, they don't really fear anything. Whereas people who have some religious faith, they have more fear at the time of death. So, because they have to think in the case of those who believe in the hell realm, they would have to think whether, according to their own behavior in their life, that when they reflect that and they find that they have done such a grave negative karmas, then they would be worried that they may be born in lower realms of existence, and that gives them fear. And so, so we are at the reflection of the different types of suffering. such as suffering in the lower realms of existence and suffering in the higher realms of existence, and then a summary of them, this with regard to the reflection on the specific sufferings. And with regard to the first, it has been already explained before, it says, and then with reference to the suffering in the higher realms of existence, there are three. The suffering of human beings, and with regard to slavery, people who are revolutionary, they actually have stopped slavery. But in some remote places in different parts of the world, there are still people who still enslave others, children. And so when you think about these things, from the kings and queens down, everyone has something to complain about, some misfortune. So I tell people that when they complain about their problems and so forth, I said, there's none from the king and queens down to the beggars in human realm world who has no problem at all. And so there are lots of problems in the world. And so I tell them that you don't have to worry, because there's no human being on this earth who has no problem. And then I tell the elderly people, I tell them that you have lived full life, which means that you are going to die when it's time for your death. So Geshe Terbum from Serache told me once, he had the doctors told him that he had TB or something, and then he went to the hospital and asked the doctors, if there's no hope for him to live any longer, tell him, and because that would give him at least an opportunity to prepare for his death by reflecting on the Dharma practices. And so the best of the practitioners, as it are said to be, and have to take joy in dying, in death. So if you reflect on death, the process of how we will die, I mean, when we die, it's not like a room becoming blacked out. But if you are able to think about death, then it also serves an impetus to reflect on the dissolution processes. So I do the resolution practice of this deity yoga 7 times or so in daily. And of course, it's very difficult to reach the path level of taking the 3 states of death, intermediate, and rebirth into the 3 kayas in actuality. But may I have a great increase in joy and delight at the time of death, through having familiarized my mind with these, the process of taking the 3 states into 3 kayas or Buddha bodies. And even if I cannot reach any high realization, Master Shantideva says, which intelligent person would despair and thinking about and despair to ride the horse of bodhicitta to which leads one from bliss to bliss. And so there is something that really moves you when you really acquaint your mind with, and so it gives you courage to work for sentient beings. And so it's not easy, but if you familiarize yourself with these practices of bodhicitta and so forth, there's nothing that does not become easier through familiarization, as Chandideva says. So those who have entered the door of Dharma refers to us. So all kinds of obstacles that you may face, such as evil friends and so forth, show that we have met with the unfavorable conditions or there are people, children who roam, drift around because their parents have died and they are getting no food. And then rich become poor. And then so meeting with things that we consider as unpleasant, and it seems His Holiness seems to have reread the part that He has already read. So with regard to this kind of suffering of meeting with unpleasant things, so when you meet with robbers or your adversaries, and what happens is they take a snatch away all your wealth and resources. And then we blame on them for having robbed us or killed our people and so forth, and make a great deal out of it. And and then when people beat us or they call us by saying that you are a dog, we kind of despise them as well, abuse them. And also even either we kill them by using weapons or covertly hire or we bring them under ours to serve us and as servants throughout their life and give them all kinds of cause them all kinds of suffering and indulge ourselves in all kinds of non-virtuous evil actions. So in this way, we try to retaliate. So there are many other types of sufferings of this kind that we meet with, such as being punished by the kings and rulers, and being confiscating our wealth and so forth. So the as humans, of course, not only should we be able to gain food, shelter, clothing, and so forth, but we have to be different from the animals, which is by using this intelligence and think about the greater goals rather than getting lost in only the samsaric attaining or obtaining the samsaric pleasures. So we should meditate to such a point that we would not be content with this kind of human life in samsara, but think about going beyond this suffering of samsara as a whole. So with regard to meditating on suffering, these are also very helpful, but if you could reflect along the lines of Jerry Rinpoche's division into the 8 sufferings, it would be really powerful to meditate on the suffering of samsara as a whole. And then next, it says number 2 is the suffering, reflecting on the suffering of the non-gods. So with regard to the abodes, it says they have these different townships, like which are named the great town of luminous, and then the series of moons, and then the excellent abode, and also the unwavering abode. So these are one above the other on the Mount Meru. There is a story that I have in the Lhamo Lhotso, the small lake or pond of Balden Lhamo. One Lhasa monk from Lhasa had gone there, which of course is shows visions, and so this monk saw someone stealing things from his room, and when he got back to his house in Lhasa, he actually found that there was theft in his house. And so in the second abode which is called the Ceres or the garland of moon, there is a lake which is called the lake, all-seeing lake. So which shows pictures or images of who would win or lose in war between the gods and non-gods. So with regards to the cosmology that is explained in our text, these are in accordance with the Indian beliefs in those old times. And I have been saying that the Buddha had not come into the world to measure the world or to and so in this Abhidhamma text named Thakvidenchu or perfect Shastra by Shariputra, these are described. And in the non-Buddhist treatises, in some Indian Hindu texts, it is mentioned that Brahma creates all kinds of world systems. And so there's a similar line in Abhidhamma Kosha which says all the world systems are arise from and created by karma. And then the sun is called the one which is drawn by seven chariots or horses. And so these the kind of names even reflect old Indian customs and beliefs. And with regard to the lunar and solar eclipses, we cannot accept what is explained in our traditional text, and which in the traditional text it is said that the moon has its own light, which is not the case at all. I had a telescope when I was in Lhasa, so I used to, from Potala, I used to watch it. And so when the sun is setting, during the sunset time in the evening, when I watched the moon, pointing the telescope to the moon, I saw that the sun's light falls on the moon, and that actually creates shadows on the moon. Because there are mountains and hills on the moon as well, and because of which the shadows are formed. And so I showed this the shadows also to my two tutors, the Yongzhen Ling Rinpoche and Chijar Rinpoche, and they also said, yes, there are mountains up on the moon as well. And so when because of this visionary kind of the lake which shows visions of who would be defeated or win, the non-Buddhists, the non-gods, would whose relatives have gone into war with the gods, would actually see them, and then they would be overwhelmed with suffering of seeing. And so no one person from Dashikil. So if you go on the in a plane crossing Tibet and then Afghanistan and to go up, and then you will also reach the USSR, and then you will reach the Arctic Circle. And when you cross over from there, you'll reach Canada. And so So in our text, it is mentioned that we will actually be able to reach the Mount Meru if you cross certain mountains and oceans and so forth to the north of India. And so this is very difficult to defend. So in the case of Master Nagarjuna and so forth, we find that they use logics to even interpret the teaching of the Buddha when it comes to the provisional teachings. And if we cannot be reliable, if we go against, by going against in reasoning or logic, how can we go against empirical experience? And so when we had in the past in Tibet, people used to beat on dogs or pigs and so forth when there was lunar eclipse. And so when I also watched the moon during lunar eclipse, it appeared that the biggest people have told me that the moon was really feeling greatly scared because of the lunar eclipse coming. And I also thought that was true, and it seemed to me also that the moon was really trembling during lunar eclipse. So these are not true. And so we could say that such beliefs are also... I'm perhaps having a big mouth here, but if Shyamala Rinpoche, the author, is here, what would he say? So he might call me this Amdo Lotus Holder. So next is the section on this reflecting on the sufferings of the gods or deities.
So next is a presentation of the suffering of the gods and goddess. We have completed the presentation on the sufferings of demigods. So the suffering of the god and goddess actually first started with the desire realm gods. And the suffering is further categorized into the suffering while dying, the suffering of dying of those gods, and being born into the lower realms. The six desire realms are actually said to be living in a very, very celestial palace with all the comforts and facilities. And it is all due to their past accumulations and merits. But when they came to see that their accumulated merits are, when they the merits are ceased, so then they see their death very near, and they lose the shining from their body. And also the complexions also changes. And they are not able to remain on the seats and the cushions as before, and also develop a sense of a very sad and sinking feeling. And also the flower garlands that they used to wear also becomes old. And before, the cloths that they wear used to change by itself, and the new clothes continues to change by itself, but it doesn't happen anymore. And also bad odor start coming from the armpits and other parts of the body, so which are referred to as the five signs of dying. And from one sutra, it is also stated that unpleasant sounds also arises, and they hear very unpleasant sounds. And their body, the light of their body also reduce. And their mind also, they can also see only one object. And the eyes also blink very often, which are considered as the five inner signs of dying. And they can see directly that they are going to be separated from all the facilities of the God's realms. And another thing is they will be able to sense and see to which rebirth they're going to. To which realm they're going to take rebirth in their next life. So therefore, if they are going to rebirth in the lower realms, which is the case is for the most, and they develop great sense of fear and sadness. And it is stated in the sutra that those kind of gods and goddesses, the suffering at the time of dying is even much severe and heavier than the sufferings of the hell realms. So such kind of the dying process actually lasts for about 7 weeks. And 1 week of the desire realm, the gods are actually very long compared to the human realms. And when the goddess of the desire realm see that the death is approaching, then they also develop such the following signs. They are being deserted by their friends, their male friends, and also they lose their earlier companions who play with them different kind of games. And when they request their male friends to touch them, and that I won't be able to see you later. So even at that time, their male companions refuse to even touch them. And some of them to rebirth in the human realms after they pass away. And another category of the suffering that the god and goddess of the desire realm have is even though those gods and goddesses are very fortunate, which is their rebirth itself, which is a result of great accumulations, and they also have great magnificent facilities. But as soon as they're going to sense that it is going to be finished, and also their companions, as stated before, refuse to come with them, and which is a great immeasurable sense of suffering for them. And next category of the suffering is the suffering generated through killing and through fighting. The gods and the demigods used to fight with each other, and the other parties, the army, and different weapons, when they hold at them, so their body parts are being cut into different parts, and so the suffering is enormous. So unless their head is cut off, they won't die, so other parts of the body regrow by itself, unless the head is cut off. And also, the gods and goddesses also have the suffering with respect to the senior ones or the greater ones abusing and beating the inferior ones. And also, the suffering such as snatching the things that you desire from you and so on. Such kind of sufferings actually exist in the 33rd heaven and below. So even though there is a great sense of inferiority and superiority within the orders of the god and goddess, however, they are much superior, their happiness superior compared to the other, the human ribbons. In Lam Rim Chemo, we have the presentation about taking rebirth to samsara with based on the 12 interdependent links. And as we know from the history that Lord Buddha himself has instructed to draw the wheel of life drawing, which we know, used to inscribe on the prayer hall, which is a very good practice. So with that inscriptions and drawing, we can think about the 12 interdependent links. And it is also presented in the 5th chapter of Abhisamaya Alamkara and also in the 12th chapter of the Fundamental of Wisdom by Nagarjuna. And after that, you also need to contemplate on the 18th chapter of Fundamental of Wisdom and the 24th chapter also. So if we contemplate all these chapters and their presentations in order, then we will generate a sense of understanding with respect to the origin of the samsaric suffering, samsaric physical body, and how it is caused and the order. So from the 12 interdependent links, so next is the presentation on the suffering of the two realms, of the form realms and the formless realms. And after that is the outline of summarizing all the sufferings of the six realms. So in this outline, it has been emphasized about the importance of to recognize the nature of samsara, the circling nature where we took rebirth from the whole realms, and also to generate a general understanding about what is liberation. And as presented before, the general and the individual sufferings of all the desire realms and so forth, it is important to consider that our human body itself is the source of all those sufferings. And when we start the practice from the taking refuge, then also to relying on the spiritual master and so on, at that time onwards, we must have a good understanding about the Four Noble Truths. And also when you look at the qualities of your spiritual master, as it is presented in the ornaments, about the 10 qualities that the master needs to understand and those things, So therefore, when you think about those qualities, the master itself need to have understanding about emptiness, and also the student also. Of course, in the clear presentation of the ornament text, of course, it is based on the mind-only school, but we can interpret the same way for the other philosophical schools. So thinking about the order of taking rebirth and liberating from samsara in terms of the Four Noble Truths is the best way to think about it. And it is also true that first we need to think about the taking refuge, then also when you contemplate about the qualities of the three jewels, and from among them, the second one, the Dhamma jewel, which comprise of the path to cessation and the cessation truth. And when the truth of cessation is explained, when we have to understand about the meaning of cease, we need to rely on the fundamental wisdom about the 18th chapter and the 24th chapter, as I told before. So in these chapters, we will realize that how the mind grasping all the phenomena as true existence arises, and how they are wrong view by nature, and how this kind of attachment and desires actually arise from the ignorant mind. And the human body, which comprises of the five aggregates, is itself a nature of all the sufferings, and it's the source of all the sufferings. Therefore, we need to understand that as long as we are within the control, within the power of this human body, the suffering will continue to come. And this human body is the basis for the suffering of this life, such as aging, illness, and so on. And it is also the basis for generating the suffering in the next and subsequent life. And the suffering of the suffering and the suffering subject to change will continue to arise as one leads to another. As the suffering subject, suffering, the conditioning suffering, which is the third category, is the basis for arising the first two suffering. And as the great Potava master stated in the Lamrim Chemo, so when you think about the suffering of the lower realms, so we have to think about the origin of those sufferings and what are the causes for those suffering. Then the second presentation of the second truth, the truth of the origin of suffering, comes. And also we have to understand that when you find the origin and the cause, it further goes to ignorant mind. And the ignorance here is again refers to the mind grasping the old phenomena as true existent. And the mind which looks at, which is the antidote of such grasping, is the wisdom realizing emptiness. Therefore, it is very important to contemplate on emptiness. So as you contemplate on the sufferings of the samsara as presented before, so one need to meditate and one need to get an idea that how good it would be if I am free of all these sufferings. The wind from this side is very strong. And one should not be satisfied merely by generating such a kind of motivation. So upon that, we need to meditate and meditate further to make sure that we have to find a way to eliminate those sufferings. we need to also generate a mind, effortlessly, which thinks about the negative side of circling around in the samsaric world. And if you think about the future rebirths and that we will be reborn again and again in those samsaric realms, then the fear or the how frightening nature of those rebirths is. And also the measure of generating the mind, such kind of a mind has to be such that if you are trapped inside a house which is on fire, so one will have such a very strong sense to be liberated from this house immediately. So we, our measure of to liberate from samsara has to be similar intense. And it has to be similar to a prisoner who wanted to liberate or get free from the prison as soon as possible. So in such a way, we have to make sure to improve our mind and to make sure to grow further this kind of mind. So if one is really a practitioner of the Buddha's teaching, we need to generate an understanding about the paths common to the middling person. So we will read from the Liberation of Palm, Liberation from the Palm of Your Hand text, and we are on page number 427. We are on day 14. Jabji quoted two verses from Great Tsongkhapa, the king of Dharma. They begin, "One's life and body are like a bubble on water." He then gave a short talk to set our motivation and mentioned the headings already covered. He also reviewed developing, believing faith in the law of cause and effect, the actual means to have happiness in our next rebirths. Training your mind in the stages of the path shared with the medium school has two subheadings: developing the thought of yearning for liberation, ascertaining the nature of path leading to liberation. As I've already said, when you cultivate the path of Lam Rim shared with the small scope and uphold the ethics of abandoning the 10 non-virtues, you will get a rebirth in the upper realms and be temporarily free from the suffering of the lower realms. But this alone is insufficient. Suppose a criminal has been condemned to die in 1 month. People go and see a man of influence for him, and for a few days he no longer receives other minor forms of punishment, being flogged, burned with hot wax and so forth, but he is still not released from the ultimate execution. Similarly, one would not be free of samsara forever, as it says in engaging in the deeds of bodhisattvas. You could go again and again to upper realms and continue to enjoy so much bliss. When you die, you fall to the suffering of the lower realms, where the suffering is unbearable and lasting. In other words, you are certain to go to the lower realms when you run out of the right throwing karma. If you want to stop the flow of suffering for good, you must be freed from samsara for good. In this medium scope section of the Lam Rim, you must develop thoughts of yearning for liberation. There are two ways of developing this: by thinking about the nature of four truths, or by thinking about the 12 interdependent links. Here, liberation means being released from bondage. Suppose you were freed from the ropes binding you, you would then be liberated from them. We are similarly bound by karma and delusions to the aggregates with which we are inflicted. We are bound in the following way. Owing to karma and delusions, the aggregates are formed. In terms of the realm, there are three realms in which this happens. That is the desire realm, form and formless realm. In terms of migration, there are five or six types of migration in which this happens. And in terms of birth, there are four modes of birth, that is, rebirth from a womb, etc. That is the nature of this bondage, and liberation means being freed from it. People generally assume samsara to mean taking on bodies from the peak of existence down to the hell without respite. People who have not studied think samsara means circling between temporary residences, or circling between the six types of migration. This may be the correct usage of the word, but it is not a real samsara. Some scholars claim that samsara consists of such kings as being conceived again and again. However, the seventh Dalai Lama, Gyatso Gyatso's claim is the best, that samsara is one's continuum of rebirth into the contaminated, afflicted aggregates. One is therefore liberated from samsara when one has broken the continuity of being reincarnated and being brought into existence under the power of karma and delusion. Reading from page number 429, the second para. There are said to be two ways of doing this, by thinking about the four truths or the 12 links. I shall now discuss it as per the first of these. When Bhagavan Buddha first taught at Varanasi and turned the wheel of Dharma for his five earliest disciples, he said, "Monks, this is the noble truth of suffering. This is the noble truth of source of suffering. That is the noble truth of cessation. That is the noble truth of the path. He discussed the four truths three times each. The one of the qualities of the four noble truths, which is to understand for the Tibetan term rik, so there are two different spellings. One spelling is in terms of the cognitive, to cognize, and I think even in the Sanskrit it is the same term. So therefore we have to use the term rig, which is the synonyms of the cognition. In terms of causes and effects, the truth of the source of suffering should be discussed first. However, the four truths here do not follow this order, for the truth of suffering was discussed first. The point of doing this was as follows. Suffering was told first because you should be moved to renounce it. If you are not so moved, you will not want to abandon its causes. When you first want to achieve some separation from these causes, you will work hard at the path, the causes for this achievement. So the four truths we discuss in this order so as to reflect the disciples' practice. Thus, these four are the fundamental things that determine how people seeking liberation should modify their behavior. Venerable Maitreya taught some similes in the sublime continuum of the great vehicle on knowing about the need to destroy the cause of suffering. And as for the liberation, the meaning as it is as similar to as presented by Nagarjuna, Lama Tsongkhapa in the commentary on the fundamental of the wisdom, that it is a state where the temporary obscurations are clear, and the nature of the Buddha nature, of the nature of the mind itself, has to be understood as mere emptiness, being clear of the temporary obscurations. And sometimes we have to play with the words about the path of being clear of the obscurations. So the term path can imply different ways, and also in our debate courtyard, we have terms such as part and this kind, which can be explained or used in different ways. So, and as for the presentation of the Four Noble Truths, it has to be a path which, or a mind which understands the emptiness. reading from page 430. The great fifth Dalai Lama gave a water analogy. When you sleep on a comfortable piece of ground and your underside gets wet, you want to first find out from where the water is coming and then stop it. You must want to be without the cause of suffering. If you are to work hard, that means to be free of the disease of suffering. To develop this wish, you must investigate the causes of suffering. And for this to happen, you must understand how you are tormented by suffering. Great Tsongkhapa said, if one does not think hard about the true drawbacks of suffering, one will not develop any yearning for liberation. If one does not think of the source, the gateway to samsara, one cannot know proper cutting of the root of samsara. Be moved to renounce this existence, weary of it, and cherish the knowledge of what binds one to samsara. Each of the four truths have four features. For the truth of suffering, there are impermanence, suffering, emptiness, and selflessness. For the source of suffering, cause, source, contributory cause, and intense production. For the truth of cessations, there are cessation, peace, splendor, and definite outcome. And for the path, there are path correctness, accomplishing, and definite deliverance. Contaminated, afflicted aggregates have three types of feeling: happiness, suffering, and equanimity. Although you do recognize the contaminated suffering for what it is, you do not realize that the other two are also suffering. Reading from page number 431, the subheading, thinking about the general sufferings of samsara, this has six sections. The first is the ban of uncertainty. You may sometimes be reborn in the upper realms, but as long as you have taken rebirth in samsara, you have not transcended suffering at all, because samsaric happiness is totally untrustworthy. Let us take the example of our past and future rebirths. Our enemies, friends, parents, and so forth change places. Once a family's old father always used to eat fish from the pond behind the house. He died and was reborn as a fish in the pool. The mother was attached to the house, so she was reborn as the family's dog. The son's enemy had been killed for raping the son's wife. Because the enemy was so attached to her, he was reborn as her son. The son caught his father, the fish, and killed it. While he ate his meat, the dog, his mother, ate the fish bones, and so was beaten by her son. Her own little son, his enemy, was sitting on his knee. Shariputra saw this and said, he eats his father's flesh and hits his mother. The enemy he killed sits on his knee. A wife gnaws her husband's bones. Samsara can be such a farce. Also, as Nagarjuna's letter says, fathers, sons, mother, wives, persons can change, enemies become friends and change back again. After that, those in samsara have no share of certainty. In other words, although we are sure about enemies, friends, etc. will always be that way, we cannot really be so certain. Friends in the early part of our lives can become our enemies later on in our lives. Our enemies can become our friends, and this holds for wealth and poverty. Sometimes who was rich yesterday could become a beggar today because he was robbed by enemies and so on. Reading from page 433, the ban of being dissatisfied. Butterflies are destroyed by their attraction to visual form, deer to sound, beasts to smell, and elephants to physical sensations. In the same way, samsaric happiness is like drinking salt water. No matter how much of it you obtain, it does not satisfy. Suppose a man has but a single coin, he will think, when will I get 10 coins? When he gets 10, he then wonders, when will he get 100? If he ever does, he will wonder when he will get 1,000. No matter how many he gets, he will not be satisfied. As the great Play Sutra says, O King, if a man were to receive all celestial pleasures there be, all noble human pleasures there be, if it did not be enough, he would seek even more. Let us take the example of celestial and human happiness. Many of us have this feeling that when even if we do have all the facilities with respect to material, and the material facilities do have a limit. But when it's come to inner happiness, such as compassion, or the inner qualities such as compassion and loving kindness and so on, these kind of qualities, mental qualities, do not have a limit. And many of us always are contented with those, not contented with those material things which only has a limit, but always contented with those mental qualities which are unlimited. So therefore, as for your studying of the philosophical studies, one should not be contented with what you have already studied. Even though you are old, you have to study further. If your senses are not supporting, or if your eyes are not clear, that is a different case. Otherwise, you have to make effort and study further as long as possible. There is one bodyguard. We came together from Tibet in 1959. And we discussed about this protection against the weapon yesterday, that amulet. And initially in Tibet, they took a little control of some land, and they fight back to Chinese military. The later, when they recede and recede from the fight, and he just have a glance back. His duty was he went back and again threw down the weapon. He was actually to throw it to the enemies, but since they already decided they are running back to the initial location, so then he eventually have a glance back, then came back. So he actually run between the run in the place where there are a lot of ammunitions alive, and later when he came back and opened his clothes, he found many live bullets from his clothes. The reason why I tell this story is that when he used to say that, of course, you don't know in the daytimes when you have your breakfast, there is no certainty that you will go, where you will go, or how you will land up. So you must eat your breakfast full. Then lunch, of course, it is the main meal of the day, so you must eat to your fill. And dinner, of course, it's good for your sleep, so you must eat to your fill again. So ultimately, you end up eating very heavy for all three meals. So now the time has come for lunch to fill our stomach. So we stop here at page number 434.
Субтитры сделал DimaTorzok.